We're putting Social Security on the plate, like I mentioned. Just 6 years, they say, from insolvency. What does that mean? What does insolvency of our Social Security system mean? I think it means a couple of different things, but very specifically, we're going to have to do something about it, right? There are wealthy couples receiving nearly $100,000 a year in benefits. People are going, how does that happen? They made a lot of money as well. We're going to talk about that here today. Chris Towner is with us, Policy Director with the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. I need to say that again. Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. I already like the sound of that. Going to break down this new research, raises good questions about fairness. We'll have to talk about that. Sustainability, and then this proposed cap on six-figure benefits. They say it could close nearly half of Social Security's funding gap. That's on the plate today for Voices of Montana. Whatever's on your mind, and do you have Social Security on your mind? I imagine you do. It's one of the biggest fiscal challenges that is going to face our country here in the next decade or so. And what does it really mean? I mean, we have automatic benefits, and we are anticipating those in our retirement. But if we get insolvent on it, our trust fund is expected to run out of reserves, which means roughly that 20 to 25% reductions across the board is what they're looking at. It's time. It's well past time, I think, to talk about some of the problems we're having with Social Security, but also the solutions out there. You can't have effective solutions without identifying the problem. So we will start there today as we welcome our guest, and it's good to have Chris Towner back on, Policy Director with the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. I repeat, Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Good morning, Chris. How you doing, sir?
Great. How are you? Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Appreciate that. Social Security, right? I think we have not been talking about it enough. I think nobody wants to talk about it, because if you talk about fixing it, you're not going to be elected long enough given our current, I think, state of impatience with policies like this. But, I mean, this has been a long-term program, a long time coming, so our solutions may be a little more long-term as well. Let's get into it. What is wrong with Social Security? What does insolvency mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a lot of people are familiar generally with how Social Security works, right? You pay taxes. It's split evenly between employer and employee. It's a 12.4% tax on the first roughly $185,000 of earnings in 2026. And then you get benefits based on how much you paid in the taxes. And the benefit formula is progressive in the sense, small p progressive, that people who earn less over their careers get more of their income replaced as a share of their income. But ultimately, you know, the people who pay the max into it get the max benefits out of it. The problem is that we have created a system that is unsustainable. Back about 40 years ago, we did some reforms when we were about to hit insolvency in the early 1980s, and we bought ourselves about 50 years of time for Social Security's trust fund to accrue reserves, and that we could pay full benefits that we promised. But the issue is a couple of things. One is that we have an aging population. We have a larger share of folks who are entering retirement than we do into the workforce. And then we've also promised benefits to grow at a faster pace than the revenues that we pay into it. And what we've seen is a lot of different changes in the economy have caused it so that we used to capture about 90% of wages through Social Security's payroll tax, and now it's closer to around 78% of wages. So we just don't have enough money to pay out everything that we promised out. And so in the next 6 years, at the end of 2032, the Social Security Trust Fund will run out. It has been running cash deficits for the last 15 years or so. We've had interest on those on the trust fund reserves that have helped pay for a little bit of the benefits, but really the Social Security Trust Fund will totally run out by 2032. At that point, the law says we're required to only pay out benefits equal to the amount of revenues that we have coming into the program. And that's about a 24% fewer benefits. So it's a 76% of benefits are funded by actual revenues. And that's a big problem. Sometimes I think that 24% doesn't sound too scary to some people, but I like to think that if my employer started telling me that they would not pay me for the last 3 months of the year, I'd be pretty upset about it. And unfortunately, it is the third rail of politics, because when you ask politicians, what are we going to do to stop that cut from happening, you get a, well, we're not going to touch Social Security. But by not touching Social Security, you have an implicit promise that cut is going to happen. So what we need to do is kind of put in place changes that either increase the revenues going into the program, decrease the benefits being paid out of the program, or really a combination of the two to get it on sound fiscal footing. And there's a whole bunch of ideas out there, including some of the ideas that we've been putting out at the committee for the last 6 months or so.
Yeah, we're going to get into that, too, this six-figure limitation here, so to speak. Let's go still back into Social Security, maybe clear up a myth, or maybe it's not a myth. Help us understand, because we hear that Social Security has been already rated, that all we have really now is IOUs. It seems like our government has plenty of those around as well. I mean, what's the truth about how secure those funds are? Because I know there was legislation that moved them from one protected area, I think, into the general fund, but that is probably not a completely accurate description.
Right. I think there's a lot of myths around how Social Security's funding works. And just to clear them up, so when we pay more in payroll taxes than benefits are paid out, it goes into the Social Security Trust Fund. That trust fund accrues assets, and it did for many years. For about 20 years or so, it accrued significant assets to the point that at its peak, I think there was close to $3 trillion worth of funds there. And those funds were there. But it's really just an accounting game more than anything. I don't think that taxes paid into the Social Security Trust Fund are really different than taxes paid into the rest of the government. But, you know, sometimes like folks like to say that that's what it is. And that's fine. As a federal budget expert, I look at the whole federal government, and that includes Social Security. And so Social Security has helped reduce deficits in general because we are paying so much in payroll tax revenues. But that has stopped as the trust fund stopped, you know, collecting surplus funds. So those trust fund, when that money goes into the trust fund, it is invested in U.S. Treasury securities. So there's special issue debt, essentially, that only the Social Security Trust Fund gets to collect. They're a higher interest rate than most other federal debt, but is tied to the rate of all of the federal debt as well. And because Social Security's trust fund accrued so many surpluses and all those reserves, it was able to invest all that money in Treasury securities, and we paid significant interest to the trust fund over the last, you know, like 30, 40 years. Mm-hmm. The problem is that we now need to redeem all of those securities just to pay out the benefits that we owe today. And that's happening at a clip of, you know, roughly $50 to $100 billion of those assets a year. It's going higher and higher as we just have more people collecting and fewer you know, like taxes going into it. So that's really creating the big accounting problem that we have now, that Social Security can only pay out as much as it is coming into it, or as much reserves as it has. So it is not true that Social Security was raided. In fact, Social Security benefited greatly from the being able to invest in U.S. government securities, and we've paid a lot of interest to the Social Security Trust Fund.
So the mechanism behind it is still solid in terms of, you know, trying to use trust fund monies, you know, singularly to pay these benefits. So there have been, I guess that's the kind of the summation here, is that the way we do business is not necessarily broken from that foundational sense. Just those other things that you kind of noted, an aging population, a workforce, those promised benefits, they're, let's look at those, that aging population. That's not much you can do about the demographics regarding it, but demographics change. You know, how much of this problem is, you know, associated with those kind of three different tenets that you noted earlier?
Yeah, I would say that most of the problem is actually just our demographics. We just have an aging economy. But part of the problem, I mean, and it's not really a problem, it's actually a great thing that's happening, is people are living longer. So people who go on to Social Security, you know, when they hit their mid-60s, they just collect for many more years. It used to be, you know, that you would on average collect for about like 18 years or so once you hit the retirement age. And, you know, that's just rising higher and higher. Unfortunately, it's not happening for at all income groups. So one thing that we do know is that folks who made less throughout their lifetimes tend to live a little bit, don't have as long life expectancies as wealthier people. So that is an issue as well, and this especially comes into how you fix this problem. But really, you know, it's the fact that, you know, like we used to have about 16 workers for every one retiree. Back in the 2000s, it was about 3-to-1, and now it's down to about 2-to-1. So it's just not, like, the finances are just not there. Like, we have to do something that changes how much we're paying into the program in order to keep paying out the full benefits. And that is like the biggest issue. I think another issue that I will mention is that benefits have risen faster than inflation. I think a lot of people like to think that, we're just paying the same benefits that we paid out, you know, adjusted for inflation. Actually, benefits rise with wages, and wages have grown a lot faster than inflation, to the point where you're getting a much larger real benefit if you retired today than people retired 20 years ago. And that's only going to continue rising. I think one of the estimates out there is that millennials, people who are now in like their 30s and early 40s, will end up getting like $1 million more than what they paid into the program. It's pretty fascinating, but it really goes to show you that we're just very out of whack with how much we pay in and how much we take out.
Boy, as hard as it is to hear some of these figures, we've got to hear them and hear them loud and clear, because they're telling us a story that we need to that we can and need to adjust our course today about it. We're talking about Social Security insolvency. What does that mean? We heard that from Chris Towner, who joins us as policy director of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Done a lot of work, more than a decade of experience in federal budget policy. Also did work with kids, first focus on children. And Social Security was a part of that, along with disability insurance. So a lot of expertise going into proposals here regarding Social Security. It's good to have you back here. We got a phone call standing by and a text message to pass on here. 781-627-5483 is that text line, and 866-627-5483 on the call. Chris, thanks again for coming on here. I didn't go through a bunch of those figures there, but, you know, We're spending a lot. Government borrows about $1 trillion. It did already in the first 5 months here of 2026. Our annual deficits are expected to exceed $3 trillion by 2026. We're throwing figures around, and we're getting numb to them. You know, a trillion and or a billion. For me, that's part of the problem here. Let's talk about one solution that you guys are putting out there, this proposal to cap Social Security six-figure benefits. Let's go into that, and thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing we realized, we've had this initiative, we call it the Trust Fund Solutions Initiative, and the premise being that there are a few federal trust funds, Social Security being one of them, but Medicare's Hospital Insurance Trust Fund and the Highway Trust Fund as well, that'll all be insolvent within the next few years. And we should put out ideas to solve them. So Social Security is one of those areas where there's kind of a lot of well-known levers that folks talk about. You know, you could raise the payroll tax, you could subject more earnings to the payroll tax's rates, you could raise the retirement age, you could, you know, change the way that we do cost of living adjustments. All of those are very well-known. But one thing we realized is that this year, for the first time, a very wealthy couple, so that's two folks who have paid into the maximum for Social Security over the course of their lifetime, so at least 35 years, because that's how the benefit formula works, they will be receiving $100,000 in benefits from the federal government. So the typical makeup of those types of people is that Social Security is not their their sole source of income, retirement income. It's actually not even the most significant source of their retirement income. They generally have pretty large portfolios of retirement income. They've got other asset portfolios. They paid off their mortgage. All of those kind of they're wealthier people. They're doing well, and that's great. We think that it's not unreasonable to say, you know what, we should cap their benefits at $100,000. We should not pay people who, you know, did really well over their lifetimes more than $100,000 a year, because they are already probably doing pretty well. And it turns out that if you do this cap that we've talked about, even if you adjust that cap for inflation over the, you know, like the next 75 years, you could save a pretty substantial amount for the Social Security Trust Fund. Because as I mentioned in our first segment, benefits actually grow faster than prices do. So inflation you'll still have inflation protection, even if you were to index that $100,000 figure. But if you were to be a little bit more aggressive, say you capped Social Security benefits for 20 years at $100,000, and then let the cap grow with wage growth as well, you could actually solve about a quarter of the funding issue. And if you did that for 30 years, you could solve a little bit more than half of the funding issue that we're facing over the next 75 years. So those are a couple ideas that we put out there. We think that that's, you know, like one lever that folks should consider in part of an entire solvency package. There's a whole bunch of other ideas we put out there to increase revenues into the program, and also, further means test the program in this same way. But it seems, you know, I think one of the really appealing parts of this proposal is that it is pretty reasonable to say, you know what, the federal government should not be paying wealthy seniors $100,000 a year. That's pretty crazy.
Well, but it there's the argument about, is this fair or is it unfair? Because you pay in, you get promised benefits, and now that promise seems to be broken. How many people are we talking about here, and how do we square away that sense that we made some promises about what you're going to get, and now we're going to have to break those promises?
Yeah, I think this has been one of the criticisms that we've seen from the proposal recently. And I'll start by noting that we're talking about affecting, 0.05% of couples, right? We're talking about those with benefits over $100,000. Their average retirement income tends to be about $2.5 million a year. And their average net worth is north of $65 million. And we're saying, you know what, you've paid into the program, and it's great that we're still going to keep paying you benefits. We're not going to completely eliminate the fact that they're going to get benefits, but we're going to cap the growth of those benefits so that we don't, we're not paying out the wealthiest seniors, more than six figures a year. I think the fairness argument is totally true, and it's valid. And I think it would be more of a concern if we were in a situation where we were already fully funded for Social Security, that we didn't have any funding issues. If that were the case, I think that would be fine. However, we're not in that situation. We're going to have to do something to change how much we're spending out so that and how much we're taking in revenues so that we don't see the huge across-the-board cuts that we're talking about in just, a little under 7 years. And if you compare us to every other country, we give the most generous retirement benefits to our wealthiest seniors by a long shot. And, we're not the only country that has retirement benefits based on how much you paid into programs. But the next closest is Japan, and they're getting about $20,000 less a year than we're talking about. So, there is a fairness argument to be made. And I think, though, that you really got to put everything on the table when it comes to saving the program. It affects just far too many seniors in this country. And we're only talking about, hitting the wealthiest of those seniors.
And we do a lot of means testing in our government for benefits anyway. I get that. As you noted, 0.05% of the population, their average net worth at $65 million. I mean, those are not insignificant things to consider here as well. And that change, as you noted, could help 20 to, up to 50% of our funding gap. So it's an important proposal out there as well. We're going to take a phone call here, and then I've got a message to pass along that is really right in line with this, what a lot of other people are thinking about. You know, how about going after all the fraud? How much of the money is being paid by the taxpayers going to illegal aliens? That is a question that we are asking because it does impact us when we look at the large number of illegal aliens that were allowed into the country and the benefits that they are surely getting. That complicates the issue a little bit, but we'll put that on the plate. Want to take this call from Nancy in Roundup, listening on the Mighty 790 KGHL. Nancy, I got 3 minutes before I have to take a break, so go ahead and set this up, and then we may have to have Chris answer that after the break.
Thank you so much, Tom, and good morning, Chris. Okay, the working standard in the United States changed. It used to be a man and woman got married. The man would work 30 or 40 years in the same company, getting a pension build up and paying into Social Security. By the time he retired, their house was paid for and everything was just fine. And I just want to say that the founders of the Social Security Department didn't take inflation into consideration. This was developed, what, in the 1930s? That has a lot to do with the woes we're seeing today. And yes, fraud. I want to say this. Just a couple of weeks ago, 109 people were caught in New Hampshire using fake Social Security cards working in a small factory there. 59 have been deported. 50 are in jail waiting to be deported. Where do these funds go? How do we stop this, Chris? Should we dismantle the program and begin all over again? And thank you so much. I'm learning a lot. And Easter blessings to you and your family.
Thank you, Nancy. It seems like, it's a good question, Chris. It seems like our Social Security funding is leaking out in different places, supplemental Social Security benefits and this and that. It's become more than just a retirement account. It's become a larger social net, so to speak. Good or bad?
Yeah, I mean, I think a few things. The program, it was designed in the 1930s. It's been changed pretty substantially over the course of the 90 years it's existed, right? Like, we're talking about a very different program. The disability benefit didn't even exist until the 60s. We made pretty substantial changes in the 80s. Widow and widower benefits have been expanded, where there's spousal benefits. There are fewer people receiving spousal benefits now, but, you know, yes, I take that point very seriously. I think that if I were designing a retirement program today, I probably wouldn't do it in the same way that Social Security is currently designed. Yeah. But it's also the most popular program in the federal budget by far. People love Social Security. They love that that they can count on it, that they get to collect the benefits. And it keeps a lot of seniors out of poverty. Actually, seniors have the lowest poverty rate of any demographic in our country. So I do think it's doing pretty well. I think we do need to make changes in order to keep the program being run sustainably. I think that, you know, it is the largest federal government program by far.
It's a growing number of people who are receiving benefits of $100,000 annually for couples or $50,000 annually for individuals. As we speak with Chris Towner, who's policy director with the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, and that is crfb.org. They got a ton of really good research and proposals and ideas out there on that website. So if it's something you're concerned about and you want to get informed on because you want to ask your candidates about how they are going to solve this very important issue in our country, crfb.org for more information. Thanks again for joining us here. It's From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Got a couple of phone calls on the line here, too, so we'll get to those as well as a text message to address. Chris, thank you so much. You know, I think I'll just kind of go to the phone here. Let's go back a little bit and address Nancy's question about the workforce changes and then, you know, inflation considerations. We looked at our aging population, but when you mentioned you would maybe redo Social Security, I don't know that there's an opportunity to do that, but I think that you would probably look at workforce changes and try to adjust in that area, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that what we would also look at is the changing nature of work. I mean, so we currently have like one retirement age for everyone, that depending on it, it doesn't matter whether, you know, they do a lot of physical labor or if they have, you know, like white collar jobs where they sit behind a desk. I mean, we might want to look at, you know, like how to make the program more equitable towards, you know, folks who just their bodies cannot do, you know, several more years of work. One thing I do want to address with the program, especially about immigration. So illegal immigration has been a big hot topic for a long time. One thing that people don't seem to understand about the program that is kind of key to understanding how immigrants interact with it is that an illegal immigrant that uses a social security number, whether it be a fake number or whether it be a number that, you know, belonged to someone else at some point in their lives, they pay into the program, but they can't collect the benefits. So we've actually benefited quite a bit from having illegal immigrants pay into the program because they're not ever eligible for the benefits. And they're not eligible for pretty much any federal benefit program as well. So if we have fewer illegal immigrants, it's actually less money that's going into the program. And we actually need more workers to make the program survive longer. So ideally, if we did have immigration, we'd have more legal immigration. But those people would also be allowed to collect benefits if it were legal. So, you know, it's a common misnomer that we have a lot of illegal immigrants collecting benefits. It's just not the case. Social Security has one of the lowest incidences of fraud in the federal government because it's actually pretty easy to trace who we're paying benefits to and who paid those benefits. We have the numbers of everyone.
It doesn't seem like we're enforcing them, though. I mean, and a lot of illegal immigrants are paid under the table. I still think that we have a problem there to solve that is going to have an impact on our Social Security.
Paying out folks on the table is obviously an issue. I think, though, the reality is, especially because the DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency from last year, had taken an interest in, you know, seeing how much fraud there was in the Social Security program. The issue is that they found that there really isn't that much. There were a lot of people who were, you know, over 110 years old who were technically on the file for Social Security, but they weren't collecting benefits. So, you know, yes, we should absolutely get rid of as much fraud in the federal government as we can, but we're talking about maybe in Social Security saving about $30 billion a year, but we're running about a, you know, $500 billion shortfall. That's not nothing, but we're going to have to make a lot of other changes in order to really close that shortfall.
Chris Towner with us once again, the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, bipartisan nonprofit group that was founded in 1981. Go in and look at those founders, members of Congress. I think you'll recognize those names, and they had a lot of respect for being independent, and this organization was built off that. I've come to trust and appreciate the approach here. Let's take another phone call here. Skip is listening in Hamilton. Julie, stand by from Helena. I want to hear from you. But Skip, on KLYQ, you're on the air here with Chris Towner.
Oh, thank you, Tom. And thank you, Chris, for coming on. A question I brought up in the past, even on, I think, this program, but for different reasons, had to do with, I'll just use myself as an example. My Social Security check in 2025 was $24 more than in 2026. And it's because the only deduction on my list from Social Security on the 1099 would be my medical insurance, which is Medicare insurance. And the premium went up so high for no reason that I know of that it ate up to 2.8% cost of living increase plus another $24. And so I'm on an Advantage program. Anybody on an Advantage insurance program, that's how they got hit. So I'm wondering, who do I speak to, at what level? Because I'm sure there's a whole group of people that got basically hurt that way. We have no control over it. The money comes out before we have anything to say about it. And even if you changed insurance companies, the same effect would happen. So I did some research on it with my insurance guy, and I still, my best insurance alternative is what I already had. So I'm wondering, where do we go with something like that? Because it's hurting a lot of people. And it's, I mean, thank God that's not, I'll say it's my only reportable income. But it's horrible to, in an inflationary area in, say, groceries, I have $24 less a month to spend on groceries. So
Skip, thank you. I appreciate that. No, Skip, I'm going to throw it right, because we'll run out of time. I'm going to throw it right to you about that. And maybe one of the things you address here too, Chris, is another proposal out there about capping our budget. Let's see, what is it? At 3% increases. I think that goes overall to federal spending, and it certainly is out of control, does it not?
Yeah, I mean, I think what a caller identified a really important part of what we're facing with federal budget constraints right now is that the cost of healthcare is just rising dramatically, and it has been for quite some time. Medicare is the second largest federal healthcare program. Premiums are supposed to cover about 20% of costs. So that means that if premiums are rising faster than, you know, inflation, we're talking about people having less money available out of their Social Security check. So what we really should be doing to fix that problem is has nothing to do with Social Security, actually. It's got everything to do with the way that we pay for federal healthcare programs in this country. Medicare has a lot of waste in it. There are a lot of ways that we can make changes to Medicare that don't actually reduce seniors' benefits and actually end up making folks pay less in premiums. And that would go a long way towards, you know, helping people with this affordability crisis that we're in right now. But that is a huge issue. We've talked about, you know, we need to reduce our borrowing, federal borrowing. We could borrow about 6% of the economy right now. We'd like to reduce that to about 3%. One of the ways that we can do that is if we have Medicare stop paying for things that it doesn't need to be paying for anymore. An example, some of the areas are a little bit wonkier, but we currently pay hospitals more money for the same service that could be done in a doctor's office. Why do we do that? There's no real reason we should be doing it. So we should maybe switch to what we call site neutral payments, where we pay them both the same. We could reduce premiums, we could reduce federal borrowing, and end up, you know, really making things better for the everyday Americans. So I take that point really seriously. The growing cost of healthcare is a huge problem for a lot of people.
Thanks for that, Chris. We'll take another call here. Julie, listening in Helena on KCAP. Good to have you along, Julie, and you're on the air here with Chris Towner.
Well, thank you, Tom and Chris. This administration, in his former term, kind of threatened to eliminate Social Security and Medicare and may turn it to privatization. And I wondered if this is being quietly, unknown to the public, being considered again. Thank you.
Yeah, good question, Julie. Thanks. Chris?
Yeah, no, I think a lot of previous proposals we've seen for privatization, it would only partially privatize the system by allowing people to invest some of their payroll tax revenues into private accounts. Mm-hmm. That we're actually so far out of balance now with Social Security that no one's talking about doing that anymore. We're actually just talking about how do we avert the significant cut. I think that there's a time and place to have a conversation about whether it's more efficient to be doing that or not. Yeah. But now is not the time. We're so far out of balance that there's really no talk about doing privatization right now.
Yeah, that's would it work? I mean, you know, give me a 30-second take on that. What would privatization do if we can get this system solvent again?
Yeah, so if we had done this 20 years ago, 2005 was the last time President Bush was talking about doing it. We would probably have a lot more wealthy seniors because the stock market has gone up pretty significantly. But there's a lot of risk involved in allowing people to, you know, take that Social Security money and instead invest it in the private market. So if we were to get back to a system where we were fully sustainable and then we wanted to have a conversation about maybe like segmenting off part of it and doing privatization, that perhaps could produce better outcomes, but there's a lot of risk involved.
A lot of things to discuss, and also a lot of other things on their website for more exploration. CRFB.org. It's the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. CRFB.org. Chris Towner, Policy Director. I'm sure this fly on the program tomorrow. We'll talk about the price of oil. Sonny Capice will join us from the Montana Petroleum Association. Here's a text message. Chris Towner is with us here, Policy Director for the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. The full benefit age is now close to the average age men die. They want to take your whole life, then you retire and pass away and collect next to nothing. I mean, Chris, you hear that a lot. You know, life is hard and then you die. The average age death expectancy or life expectancy is 76.5 for men and 81.4 for women. If you are already over 65, you're going to get some additional time there, so to speak. But maybe talk about those demographics, the retirement age, and how all this, again, tries to make sense. And then, for me, the big question is, how do you mount the willpower in Congress to make the changes that might be necessary?
Yeah, I get this question a lot, especially as we talk about maybe making changes to the retirement ages. And my mother is just about 70. I've successfully convinced her in not collecting until she hits 70. And she makes this argument to me, well, what if I only live until I'm 72 or something, and I don't collect that many in benefits? But that's actually not what the point of the program is. The point of the program is not to get out as much as you paid into it. It is a social insurance program. It's to insure against the fact that you could live much longer. I then question her and I say, well, you know, what if you live until you're 95? Do you have sufficient savings to last until 95? And the answer is no. So, you know, like that is part of the problem, is that folks need to realize that it is an insurance program against old age, and it's really successful. We've made it work really well. But if we did make changes to the ages, we would not do them tomorrow. We would not say, oh, actually, everyone who's going to retire, you know, over the next year is actually going to have to retire at 70. No, we would phase in the age increase over a long period of time. I'm in my 30s. I don't think it's fair to say that I have the same retirement age as my mother. That should not be the case. You could ask me to work until my 70s, and I'd have plenty of years to adjust. Same with all of my other peers, you know, the generation below me. We would have a lot of time to figure out how to make changes to our retirement savings in order to adjust for that. What we can do, we really need folks to talk to their representatives to get the sense of urgency around this. We've seen in Congress over the last couple of weeks that there's been a lot more interest in talking about Social Security's financial problems, that it really starts with constituents. And, you know, maybe we need to have some sort of bipartisan commission that figures out the answers to this, because no one wants to run on this issue. And it's unfortunate because it affects so many people in this country.
Well, I think that needs to be done. I think we need to do the same thing with our energy policy as well, because the math's not adding up in that regard. I got about 30 seconds here too, Chris. I'm just going to go CFRB.org for more information. You know, talk about your organization here for a little bit and you know, what the good work you guys are doing.
Yeah, I mean, so we are a nonpartisan nonprofit. We're not part of the federal government. We've got a mix of Democrats and Republicans who are just trying to work to make the country's fiscal situation much more sustainable. We tend to be, you know, loathed by both sides of the political aisle, because we want to raise your taxes, but we also want to cut spending. But that is really what's going to take to get, you know, our national debt under control. And I hope that people start to realize that, you know, we've only built up so much of this debt because we refused to pay for the priorities that we want over the last, you know, 30 years or so.
That's exactly. Very, very, very nicely said. Chris, thank you so much. Thanks for the work. Continued success there. We do have a reckoning, and facts are needed. Chris, God bless you. Yeah, see you around, okay?
So yep.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.